This is the Hollywood Casino Press Box. Now back to Frank Cusimano on 590 The Fan and 590thefan.com.
I think we're going to dust off that audio. I think it was about a month ago where I went on a huge rant that I was the only one in this town that believed in the Blues. That I saw a winning streak coming, that I would probably play Binnington more. If we could, let's clip that, send it maybe to Stillman.
Something about Schwartz getting out of his slump and Tarasenko's going to go on.
I said it was coming, yeah.
Yeah.
Just, hey, I said, believe in Chief. He'll get this thing going. If we could clip that, send it to Stillman, send to Army. The hockey savant is what my friends call me. And so with that, we bring in Joey Vitale, part of the Blues broadcast team on the Mighty Mox. Joey, I'm sorry you didn't hear that day when I went on a huge rant saying, believe in this squad. I'm here to tell you I may have been the only one, okay? We just can't find the audio.
Martin, you may be have a career in pro scouting after right. this, so keep your options open.
Yeah, I wish it were true. It weren't. I think I was in that lose for Hughes camp for a while. And you've been around this team all year. It has to be. It's never as bad as it seems. Even when a team loses a couple games in a row and it's real depressing, there's always something better around the corner. But I can't imagine even you guys being there every day saw this coming.
Well, you know it, Martin, and thank you for having me on this morning. It was a situation, I think, earlier this year where, and truly I believe this, and I talked to a lot of guys about this, you bring in a lot of individuals. And I think Doug Armstrong still did do a great job as far as the talent and the caliber of people he brought into this organization. He made a lot of good corrections heading into the season. And with that being said, I think that it was a situation where there was a lot of great individuals and they're put into a team, much like when you see in the Olympics, you have all this talent and teams just don't really perform right away. And it takes time. I know that's cliche, but it did take time and we knew this team would come together. It was just a matter of time. Now with pro sports, you don't have too much time. Because if you take too much time, then that's when teams need to go back in sell mode, and you got to get rid of these players. Then you got to start rebuilding again. So the Blues timed it perfectly. I mean, this is coming out of Christmas break. We really saw something kind of sparked. And to me, I still feel like it was that fight Robert Bortuzzo had with Zach Sanford in practice. Remember, this is about 2 days before they go on that Western Canadian swing right before Christmas time. And that's when this team really kind of started to come together. So you mentioned that. We'll see how this develops with that fight. I really felt that that was a moment the team kind of shook things up. The team's been rolling from there. And even the games they were losing, because it was a bad bounce. 5-on-5, they were doing really well. And I think now they're starting to get the bounce that they want. And now Jaden Schwartz is starting to come alive. So all the players, all the individuals that were playing individual hockey are really starting to come together as a team now.
I know you're in that room a lot. You're doing your segments, Cup of Joe on KMOX. You get to know these guys inside and out. You're traveling together. Give us something on Jordan Binnington because it's hard to get anything out of him. He's very low-key. It serves him well, obviously, as a goalie. But is there something there that we're not seeing, or is this kid stoic, you know, 24/7?
Well, you know, first and foremost, and I say this all due respect to Jordan and every goalie, he's a goalie, so he's pretty weird. And that kind of comes with the territory. Anybody who wants to sit back there and take rubber all day long has got to have a little bit different of a personality. So Jordan's a little goofy. I'm not going to lie to that. I think he'd be the first to admit it. He doesn't give you much. He doesn't give you much not only to reporters, but that's just really his personality. And I think that really suits him really well. You ask him questions, he gives you one-word answers. I remember after his first victory in Philadelphia, he gets a shutout, and we're talking to him after the game, and on air, Chris Kerber's talking about, wow, what a great moment. If you ever dreamt of when your first start would be like this, just builds up this question. And he goes, yeah, it's pretty exciting. And that was it. It was dead. After that, just dead air. And Chris kind of looked at each other, and we kind of rolled our eyes, and we laughed about it. But to the point is that he's a focused kid on the ice, and he has that same demeanor off the ice. He's not going to give you much. He's really in a zone. And I think he just really approaches this hockey thing very business-like. Yes, he's here to have fun, but he's here to win games, and he's here to establish himself. I believe, truly, he's got a bit of a chip on his shoulder still. I think, you know, the Blues drafted him way back in 2011. He's been sitting in the minors for so long. He comes into camp this year, like 5, 6, 7 years in the organization, and he's like the fourth and fifth goalie on the depth chart. Everyone's talking about Billy Hughes, so he's going to be the next goalie called up. Well, Billy Huso gets hurt in the minors. We're left with Jordan Binnington. He gets a little bit of a sniff, and he's grabbed that opportunity, and he sees it. And I believe it's because of his business approach. He's got a chip on his shoulder, but without a doubt, he has been such a bright spot for the Blues.
You played in the league. I'm sure you had a vibe on what Ryan O'Reilly's game was like. I think Blues fans, even those who follow the league closely, have been blown away by how good this guy has been from day one. You know, even when the team was really bad, O'Reilly was good. Now that the team's really good, O'Reilly is still really good. I think that's what a lot of us has marveled at, is that the consistently level from that guy night in and night out.
Well, that's just it. I mean, he played in Colorado to start his career, and then he went to Buffalo, both teams that had struggled. I mean, he's been on losing teams the day he got to St. Louis. Now St. Louis was starting to lose. But what's amazing is your point. He's been a really good player on a very bad team. And I can tell you, I had some really rough years in Arizona, and we were dead last. It is very, very difficult to be a good player on a bad team. And on the flip side, it's very easy to be a great player when you're not a good player, when you're on a good team, because I've been on the both sides of that. And so for Ryan O'Reilly to come out here and do what he's done and been as consistent as he's been, especially when the Blues were struggling, has been really remarkable. You know, his work habits off the ice, it's really something special. I talked to his dad. They had the father's trip last week, and just kind of going through his off-ice regimen, how, you know, the breathing exercises, his conditioning, his hand-eye coordination. You know, you go to the locker room before games, he's doing these tricks with balls. He's balancing on balance beams. I mean, this is a guy that is just completely locked in, and he's been so impressive individually. But what's really stood out for me, and I think what Blues fans are really starting to see, is that he's not just a good player for himself. He's really starting to bring out the best in players he's around. Remember, David Perron was a healthy scratch in December. He comes back a week later. He's put on Ryan O'Reilly's line. From there, David Perron went on an absolute tear. I think he had a 12 or 13-game point streak. He gets hurt. Now Vladimir Tarasenko's coming up. Remember, Vladdy was struggling before he joined Ryan O'Reilly. Now Vladimir Tarasenko's unstoppable. So Ryan O'Reilly does a lot of good things for himself. But more importantly, he really brings out the best in the players he's playing with.
Do you think there's a preferred matchup? You know, if you get into that top three in your division, there's a decent chance it's you and Nashville right out of the gate, which would be a lot of fun, there's no doubt. If you finish eighth, then maybe it's Calgary. I know your personal agent, Andy Strickland, in here last week said he liked the Calgary matchup over the Preds in the first round. Do you think, is there something that you see as more ideal than the other?
You know, I think that we matched up very well against Nashville. Calgary scares me, and they scare me because they have just four lines of scoring. You know, Nashville Predators, they have, I'd say, two lines scoring and two lines of grinded out and kind of that tough hockey. So Calgary does scare me. They got a lot of youth, a lot of young guys, a great defensive core, and Mike Smith back in net. He is a little shaky, but in playoff hockey, he's been proven to steal games. So that makes me a little nervous. I like the Nashville Predators matchup because I watched something last weekend that I wasn't really sure if the Blues had it in them. I didn't know if the Blues could play that rough and tough playoff style of game. And we've never really been tested up to that point. But the Nashville Predators series, the one they swept last weekend, that was about as close to a playoff game as you're going to see. There was a fight right out of the gates. There was all kinds of extracurriculars after the whistle. There was chirping. There was stuff going on benches. You had guys on the benches yelling at each other. You had guys in the penalty box yelling at each other. It was a physical, physical matchup. It was a heavy matchup. And I think the Blues showed that not only they can score goals, not only they can play good defense, but they can play that physical playoff kind of gritty style of game. And they handled Nashville very, very well. I thought they got to the net extremely well on Pecorine and the whole defensive core. You know, Nashville Predators defense is what is their engine. The Predators, David Poile, the GM, has built that team around puck-moving defensemen to get up the ice. Well, the Blues have that high forward. They come back. They collapse in the D zone. They don't allow the Nashville Predators to come up in the offensive zone and dictate the game. So if you can shut down the Nashville Predators defensemen, I believe you can shut down that team. The Blues did it last weekend.
Joey Vitale, Blues broadcaster on CamelX with us here on 590 The Fan. I was in the car last night. I think it was after the Schwartz goal, the third goal, and you said Kincaid is really fighting it, and you basically said, and he looks a little shaky, and then they unload and get a bunch more goals on him. He ends up smashing his stick. Kind of had an Eddie Belfour moment that kind of went uncovered there, but I noted you could see it. That's your expertise because you played in the game. I'm wondering now, having done this for a little bit, how much more are you enjoying the job? How much more comfortable are you in the booth?
You know, Martin, it's been great. It's been an amazing learning experience, first and foremost. I've had an incredible teacher, and I mean this sincerely. Chris Kerber is one of the best in the game. You ask any broadcaster, we go to all these visiting rinks, and everyone says the same thing. You're in great hands. Stay under Chris Kerber's wing. He knows what he's doing, and I believe that, and I trust in him. And he's shown me just the ropes, and it's been amazing. At breaks, we kind of do some teaching. So that's the first and foremost. But, you know, for me, adjusting to this whole job, it's been extremely nerve-wracking. That first, first maybe 4 weeks was really nerve-wracking. Like, I was always nervous. I didn't know what to say, and I didn't know how to break a play down. But then by the second, third month, I started kind of adjusting a little bit better. I started seeing the game for what it was. I started breaking it down a little bit better. And then I'd say over the last 4 to 5 weeks, you know, leading up to February, I've almost to the point where I see it so well. Now that I know this team so well, I'm actually starting to look ahead a little bit more. You know, Darren Pang, who does the color for the TV side, you know, we had a great dinner about 3 or 4 weeks ago. And he said, Joe, I think you're at the point now you need to start looking ahead a little bit. Kind of Tony Romo, if, you know, anyone who watched a playoff football this past year. You know, he was always predicting plays. And yes, you're going to be wrong sometimes. And I predicted the overtime goal in Nashville a couple of games ago, and I got goosebumps of that. And Chris Kerber last night, he predicted the Jaden Schwartz goal. So it's been really fun to not only start breaking plays down, but now we're starting to look ahead. We're starting to predict a little bit. And, you know, believe it or not, we've been right a couple of times. So it's always a good feeling. I think it's good for the listeners and fun for the listeners when they can kind of get a sense from the broadcaster how the game is going, but also how he anticipates it to go, and then when that kind of comes to fruition.
And this will surprise no one, but Panger's like 50 going on 5. I saw the picture of you guys in California. You're sitting in those little toy cars or whatever, toy boats outside. You know, like when we were a kid, outside the grocery store, you could put a quarter in and you'd go for that little ride and the boat would rock up and down. I saw you two goofballs sitting in those. And at least you're a little younger. People don't realize Panger is a kid at heart.
I cannot believe this guy. I mean, you see him on TV. I didn't really know him. This guy is the best, most entertaining, the most energetic, the most positive. I mean, I cannot. He's like a big ball of energy wrapped up into this little body, and it's just been so fun. We sit by each other on the plane, and we're going out. We're jumping in boats. We just do everything. He does everything. You're right, Martin. He's like a 12-year-old kid, and I think that's why people love him so much, because he's got that kind of usefulness. He's always curious about what's going on, and you should see him just talk to players in the locker room. He doesn't have a filter. He just is so excited, and he just brings out the best in people. He can take a bad day and turn it into a good day. And I tell you what, it's been so much fun. I sit in a plane some days, and I look at him, and I sometimes wonder how old I am, because the stuff we get into is just, I mean, it's for the ages. You know, one of these days I need to sit down and just put all these stories into a little pamphlet, and so I can share with my kids one day, because it's been so much fun. The job's been great. It's been businesslike. But it's so great to have a partnership with Darren as well, where you can make sure you're doing a really important thing, and that's having fun.
And because we're journalists, we got to have fair and balanced. We've got to tip our cap to Chaminade Hockey. I didn't realize this had happened until you texted me about it last night. Give me an idea. So remind me again how this works, how CBC got bounced.
Martin, you kind of broke up there. I didn't hear the last 20 seconds of what you just said. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
no,
people,
I guess
the system itself is kind of weird. Explain that to people.
You know, yeah, we have to give props to Chaminade. I went to Chaminade in 7th and 8th grade, so I got to give them a little bit of love. So the playoff series, the way the Mid-States state championship works, it was CBC and Chaminade. They were both in the semifinals last night. It's a two-game series. Chaminade won the first game a couple nights ago, so they're going to play game two. Now, if the other team wins game two, which happened last night, CBC won game two, so the series is 1-1. You don't go to a third game. You just go right to what's called a mini game. It's a sudden death overtime, basically. And then if no one wins that, you go into a shootout. So the series was tied. CBC Chaminade 1-1. It ended up going to shootout last night. I talked to Nick Carosello, the assistant coach, after the game. He was super bummed. Apparently, CBC hit the post on the shootout. And now Chaminade, I believe, is going to be facing SLU or Kirkwood in the Mid-States Championship. That was the other semifinal. So heartbreaker for CBC, unfortunate for the Joes family. I know they work so hard, but there's always next year.
It is kind of a weird deal. So it's basically the best of two. You know, you have a two-game series, which makes no sense on the surface.
Yeah, you know, it is. It's best of two, and then you got that minigame, which I played in one before. Super stressful, but also a lot of fun, and really it comes down to just one little five-minute minigame that kind of dictates the season, and now they have a shootout that kind of dictates who goes on.
Joey, great to have you on the show, and a lot of fun watching the Blues these days. Thanks for checking in. Have a great trip.
Martin, thanks for the chat, buddy, and you guys have a great day as well.
All right, Joey Vitale, CBC alum, but also Blues broadcaster, first year in the booth with Chris Kerber. Hollywood Casino Press Box here on 590 The Fan. Martin Kilcoyne with you, and time now, let's talk some Mizzou with Jim Sterk, the athletic director. Jim, welcome. Let's start with that basketball game last night. Never a dull moment, right?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. No, our fans get their money's worth. They keep us till the last second.
It used to be when your team got a double-digit lead, you're like, oh, right. And now Mizzou gets a double-digit lead, you got to cross your fingers and say, oh, no, did this happen again?
Yeah, I don't think anything's safe in college basketball. Last night I saw that Louisville had a 23-point lead with 9 minutes to go, and they ended up losing to Duke. So, yeah, it's crazy.
A lot to get to, and I want to start with the NCAA. We've all read now about the infractions and then the punishment that came out. You guys have been very vocal about it, and, in fact, if people go to mutigers.com, they can see it there on the front page, sort of not only your response. I feel like more than anything, I don't want to say you guys are angry, and maybe you are, but I feel like right now you're at the stage where you're trying to educate not only your fan base but people out there who are saying, well, what exactly happened? Is that the stage you are right now?
Yeah, exactly, and thanks for mentioning that. The MUTigers.com, our communications folks, put along with our compliance and others contributed from across campus as well, just so that people understand what exactly happened, what occurred, and our response, and how they can support the Tigers.
And the breakdown basically is there was a. We all know by now, there was a tutor, there was some cheating that went on, but the findings were she acted alone. More, isn't that essentially what they said to you?
Yes. And so we, it was right at, just shortly after I arrived in 2016, and we had heard from her supervisor that she had been a longtime tutor, but in the last year or so had some financial difficulties and just a change and some personal stuff that she started assisting students beyond what was legal, if you will, and it's with online classes. And so one of the points, I think, you know, anyone that knows with online classes that presidents across the country are dealing with it and academic areas, that how do you make sure that person is doing the work? And so what she started to do, and she had been educated, background check, all those things, and she, you know, manipulated the system so that she could help with assignments, do things for students. And then and a lot of times when the NCAA came in and interviewed our student athletes, it was more that she got frustrated, wanted to do it quickly, wanted to get more hours, and then would do the work for the students. And it was beyond. And so what we did was once we found out, then we froze all emails. We had staff go through thousands and thousands of emails and records and all, and came back with there were 12 student athletes that had eligibility that she assisted with. And so when working with the enforcement staff and from the NCAA, they came in, they investigated, they read through, they interviewed all our students and staff and everyone, and came back that, yeah, she had acted alone, that she helped 12 students in a way where we needed to report it. And the logical penalties, if you will, or expected penalties were if they competed in contests that you might have to vacate those wins, and then probably probation. And this two students that still had eligibility that were here last year sat out the penalties that were agreed upon by the NCAA. They sat out contests, and so they paid a penalty last year already. So then for this to come out now is really, we think it's egregious and that they abuse their discretion is the term that they use. They abuse their discretion in applying penalties.
And what did they tell you throughout the process? Was it communicated officially, hey, listen, let's work together, you know, there will be sanctions, but if we work together, it's better for you? Was that sort of communicated along the way?
So it's really interesting. So they the enforcement staff does not sit on the panel, then that makes a decision on the penalties. And so that's separate. So we had great communication and worked with and came to conclusions with the enforcement staff. And actually, we wanted to do even, we had both agreed with summary disposition so that didn't even need to go to the committee and listen to the committee and then just agree on the findings. And but the committee on infractions are, they wanted to hear, and it was more, there was some procedural things. The enforcement staff did not want to name the tutor because she had threatened to put student information out on the internet. She had tried to sell it and out there, and so we were concerned about student records and everything, and trying to protect the student athletes. And the enforcement staff agreed with us, but the committee on infractions didn't, and so they then tried to have her come before the committee, and that didn't end up going well, and it didn't end up happening. She refused, and so then we were just waiting over another 6 months from when we had the hearing to getting the results of their report just a week and a half ago.
I think everybody that follows college sports was aware of what went on at North Carolina and then the subsequent sort of non-action by the NCAA, even though they admitted there were some things going on there. Do you have any doubt this is sort of a, I don't know that it's a makeup call, but that this is a reaction to what didn't get done in North Carolina? Do you guys feel that you're sort of in the wake of that?
Yeah, in the North Carolina case, they actually, the case that North Carolina put forward, that yes, there were classes that were actually bogus classes that, and kids would sign up for them, but kids across the campus signed up for them, not just student athletes, which is a crazy argument, but it ended up working it from a legal standpoint. And I think the Committee on Infractions was frustrated with that decision. And there's, at the same time, there's a group going out, or I mean, has been assigned a task force to really look at academic integrity and all. And so I think all of that is played into this decision.
Jim Sterk, athletic director at Missouri, with us, Martin Kilcoyne on 590 The Fan. You came out strong and you said, we will appeal, we will win. What's the process like? And for your fans and alumni, what's realistic here moving forward?
So we agree that there were violations that occurred, but also those violations are something that's occurred in every part of the United States at every institution with online classes. It's not something that isolated to Mizzou. When there's online classes, there's opportunity for others to be involved and assist with assignments or take tests for someone. It's really difficult to monitor, and so we've with our academic folks across campus and our faculty rep have done a great job of evaluating where we're at and improving even on what's been done in the past. But still, there's that opportunity. And so, as far as moving forward, so we're appealing by this week, Friday. And then there's a few days it'll take for them to respond back, and then we have 30 days to actually put our appeal together and respond with what we feel was inappropriate. And so our attorneys and our outside counsel are working on that right now, and they'll be doing that. Then I think the committee appeals committee has a time frame, and so likely it'll draw into summer, late summer, at some point during the summer, that we'll have an in-person hearing, and then hopefully soon after get some resolution on the result of that.
Jim, how much precedent is there? How much have you guys been able to look into the history here? Is there much where people have challenged them and gotten a reduction of the punishment, or is there much history there?
It's a difficult task, but we do think that there's a precedent as far as that they abuse their discretion on the penalties that they assign. So we think that's in our favor as far as showing examples of more egregious violations, if you will, and there were no postseason. And we, as I said before, I think we felt like probation was appropriate, and then vacating of some of the wins. But our student athletes that are here right now do not have, none of them were involved with this. Actually, our head coaches, I think Barry had just come on as head coach, and so none of our other baseball and softball weren't even here, and so it's something that we feel very strongly about. We've had broad support from Senator Blunt and the legislature in Missouri and across the country, and we're going to be mobilizing those folks and continue to push back in a public way, but then also working within the system of the NCAA as well.
Last thought for Jim Sterk, because there are sanctions and because there's negative publicity that comes with it, other programs, speaking specifically to football now, we're starting to hear where other programs like, hey, if you want to get out of there, you're a senior, you can leave. And how prevalent is that? And is there any way to sort of either monitor or push back on that if other programs are trying to steal your kids?
Well, actually, they do need to notify our compliance office if they want to contact our student athletes, or that is a violation in itself. And so, but also I think Coach Odom's, actually they're meeting today in the Southeast Conference, the football coaches are meeting today, and hopefully they can have a healthy discussion about that. I think there's been coaches in the league that have said have told their staff they're not going to do that. And I think that's what Barry is pushing for with his peers within the league.
Hey, Jim, thanks for the time. And, boy, when it comes to taking on the NCAA, I think people that didn't go to Mizzou have got your back. And hopefully you get some resolution on this. I know it's going to take a while, but thanks for clarifying things for a lot of your fans out there.
Well, yeah, and I just encourage people to go to mutigers.com, and you'll see there. And we'll continue to update. That'll be a living, breathing document that will continue to receive information and updates. So thank you for your support.
All right, that's Jim Sterk, the athletic director at the University of Missouri. And again, you can read through it. One of the things that will jump out at you if you dig in a little bit on this, and some of it's minutia, but essentially they found that this woman, the tutor, that was, you know, cheating, doing the homework for some of these athletes, I think it was 9 football players, maybe 7 or 9, and then 1 softball player and 1 baseball player. And then the probation or the punishment that came down, postseason ban, postseason ban, postseason ban. They're like, so the football that had like a handful of kids that were connected to this gal, and there was 1 baseball player, 1 softball player, and that was the equivalent of a postseason ban. I mean, I've said this before, anytime there's some type of cheating under your watch or with your program, it's hard to complain, because if there's any cheating going on, although it's college sports, we all know, let's be honest, let's not think that this is the first time anything bad has happened. It does seem that the punishment didn't fit the crime. And clearly, there's a woman that's on this COI, the Committee on Infractions, who I think had something to do with North Carolina and is trying to, like, do the right thing now. There's a clear conflict of interest there. But it's, if you want to dig deep on it, it is sort of fun to go through it all at mutigers.com, or as we know it, Mutigers.
I was wondering if you're going to bring that up or not. It's just the explanation still makes no sense. Obviously Mizzou needs to get hit with something because they did.
And they kind of said, we know that it was on our watch, we got to accept it.
They broke violations. So obviously something needs to happen, but for the NCAA to say, well, we don't want to compare cases, that's not right, but then also throw in the report, hey, North Carolina didn't admit to anything.
Right.
So that, and you guys did, so your fault. It just it doesn't make any sense at all.
If I'm Missouri, I mean, I would be furious, but I also wouldn't hold my breath for something to happen, because
it's
I have
time
a
how are you the chance of you winning?
I have a bad feeling that this is these infractions will be set. I mean, I don't think the NCAA likes saying they made a mistake, and even if, you know, millions of people on social media are bashing the NCAA for making a mistake, I don't know how this is going to be resolved.
It is funny because college rivalries are very deep-seated, like Missouri and Kansas, and yet hatred for the NCAA has brought them together.
And that's what I was telling them at the end, like, going against the NCAA, everybody's like, go ahead. Plus, it's such a nameless, faceless group.
Yes.
You could say, God, I hate Kansas. Why? Well, I don't like Bill Self. Or that North Carolina, God, I can't stand Roy Williams. Or you say, I hate the NFL. You know who I hate? Roger Goodell. Ooh. Yeah, I'm mad at the Cardinals and the DeWitts for not spending money. There's always something you can tangibly point to or a person in charge. NCAA, is it Mark Emmer or whatever? But for
Mark Emmert, for the most part,
who doesn't
do anything.
Oh, I hate the NCAA. What jerks, these bullies. Even when Jerry Tarkanian was like ranting and raving, oh, I hate the NCAA. It was like, who is it? Well, you know, that organization. It's weird because you all collectively, you don't like Trump. I don't like Trump. Okay, you didn't like Hillary. You're like, there's a specific person you can point to, and the NCAA, it's always like a building. Yeah, those people, that group there in Indiana, and you just point at the giant building that says NCAA.
And there's always people on the other side, too, right? You say you hate Trump or Hillary, there's always supporters, and same with Bill Self and Roy Williams. Do you know anyone who likes the NCAA?
Oh, I'm sure you could point out a lot of employees from the NCAA.
I mean, like, people who aren't paid by them. Like,
oh, no.
Like, you don't have to be paid by Kansas to be a Bill Self fan. Anyone who's just like, yeah, I love that NCAA.
Let's go
paying players. That's great.
Let's go to a tournament game, and we'll have an old-fashioned pennant. And I'm going to hold up my pennant. It's just going to say NCAA on it. I support the league. Well, I do think it's unique because when these things happen, it's easier. And I salute Mizzou for not running and hiding the day that this all went down and they put out a statement. And I said, you cannot do that. You can't say, I'm so hopping mad. I'm going to put out a statement. That's not the same as getting your voice out there. And then they clearly that afternoon started talking to reporters. Since then, Jim Sterk has been available, making the rounds. They're trying to be as open and as public as they can be. And even pointing out, here's the stuff that went wrong on our watch. Here's the stuff. And I don't know what the motivations were. The woman, it seems like she was trying to make some money. She sort of asked for money. It seems to have made the case against her stronger and against Mizzou. It got weird. I mean, let's be honest. She seemed to be very much, like she said, I've got 42 names to name. And it came down, I think it was 9 that they said for football, 1 in baseball, 1 in softball.
It makes you think maybe she's crazy, but 42, there may be more.
Right. Let's get the name. She's like, I'm going to publish all of it. We're all like, oh, okay. Mentioned Matthew Mauch. That was my favorite part. And even Matty
Mauch. Who we all thought was a scholar.
Yeah, we're like, what? And then he favorited the tweet. She said, among those I worked with, Matthew Mauch. All right, quick break here. Bri, a word from any of our sponsors at this point.
We have Dr. Michael Jones, 1-866-260-EYES for any of your eye care needs. Maryville University, the sponsor of our listener line, if you all want to call in, 855-282-8255. They have iPads now with loaded all of your books for school books. You don't have to spend, you know, $80 for a book. And then
they do their own homework.
Yes.
Just to be fair.
They do their own homework at Maryville. So there you go. Fantastic institution, Maryville.edu. This show and the Midday Grind will be broadcast from Maryville University next Thursday. So we look forward to that remote.
And tomorrow at the Schnucks on Monticello out there in
Highway K.
O'Fallon, Missouri. I like how we always go, it's that way. God's country.
If you just hop on 40, I'm sure you'll see it eventually.
10 a.m. until 3 p.m. tomorrow is also Valentine's Day, in case you've forgotten. Strick's coming up at the top of the hour. Andy Strickland here. We'll talk some hockey with Strick. And texters are always welcome. It's just that we don't always read that. Maybe, Brian, I'll do a Frank. Okay, what's on the text line? And then Brian said, not much. Okay, what else? We'll come back. We'll get into some of your texts, whether it's Blues or Mizzou. Thoughts of the day, 855-282-8255. That is the text line, 855-282-8255. Are you reeling in the east? Stowing away.